This episode of the UAV Digest is sponsored by GoEngineer, provider of design, engineering, and 3D printing solutions for the aerospace and unmanned vehicles industries. To learn more, visit the UAVDigest.com/GoEngineer. You're listening to episode 33 of the UAV Digest. I'm Max Flight in Hartford, Connecticut.
And I'm David Vanderhoof in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania.
David, we have another week with lots to talk about.
Never fails, does it? So I guess we should dive right into it. Our topics this week are a Victorian near miss, is it your fault or mine? Getting droned up in social media, UAVs observing the dead, beer delivery in the UK is tapped out, and a hot video of the week, and more.
Those are good.
Our first story this week, Victorian mine drone in near miss with aircraft. The ATSB, or the Australian Transportation Safety Bureau, has issued a final report that says a SenseFly EB-178 UAV came within about 100 meters horizontally and up to 70 meters vertically from an Airs S2R crop duster. The ATSB rated this incident, which occurred in September 2013, as serious.
Yes, the EB was flying on a photogrammetric site survey mission, a four-hour mission, over this mine, which, according to the article, is an unused mine. The interesting thing, or the first interesting thing, is that the crop dusting pilot, he didn't even know about this encounter until the next day when he was told what happened by the EB pilot.
Yeah, the crop duster, the radio in the crop duster was turned down so he couldn't hear the EB pilot, who is required by law to have a radio in manned airspace, try to call him to tell him what was happening. So the pilot must have turned up the radio and turned down his headset. So I'm not sure how that happened. But then it gets better because, and I got to give the EB pilot lots and lots of credit, because he hadn't proceeded to have the mine manager contact the farmer who relayed the message to the crop duster, just so he'd know that there's the UAV flying in the area.
Yeah, the crop duster. Apparently, the pilot assumed that this warning that finally he received was about a fixed-wing airplane. Somehow he didn't get that this was a UAV. So thinking it was another fixed-wing airplane, the crop duster figured that, well, he'd be safe if he stayed below 500 feet AGL, which, of course, is where the UAV was. Oh, dear, what a mess. Now, the procedure normally is that if there is an aircraft in the area where you're flying a UAV, the procedure is to land it. But this EB, which is a fixed-wing plane, landing it, according to the article, is a 3 to 5 minute process where the craft sort of spirals down and lands and kind of takes up a 60-meter radius while it's coming down. So the UAV pilot, seeing that this crop duster was, you know, staying in the area, instead of bringing the EB down, he kept it at altitude in order to avoid the crop duster.
So, yeah, to make a long story short, folks, we actually have an incident where the UAV pilot did everything in his power to do the right thing, and it still got in trouble. But the crop duster seemed to have issues as well, so I think this is for the first incident we have really of a near miss, it seems like it's a no harm, no foul, and I don't think there's any going to be any penalty awarded to the EZ pilot or the crop duster pilot.
Yeah, it sounds that way. Now, I took a look at the ATSB report, and there's a link to that report in the article that we'll put in the show notes, so you can get to that if you like. But there is some activity, some action that came out of this. The ATSB report says that the operator of the UAV has conducted a presentation on UAVs to air traffic controllers at Moorabbin Tower. They have also commenced a campaign to advise agricultural aircraft operators of their work, what UAV aircraft look like, and to establish protocols for sharing the airspace during future operations.
So they're doing all the right things. One tiny note is this wasn't a copter. The ESB is a fixed wing aircraft, right. A small fixed wing aircraft. So for once, it's not a Phantom. But yeah, it's definitely a fixed wing aircraft. So you couldn't really just drop it out of the sky or lower it vertically. You have to fly it, and that's why the circle. So
right. And coincidentally, listener Bill sent in an article about another incident in Australia. This is titled "Drone and Rescue Chopper Almost Collide as Drone Crashes Mount." And this is, well, we don't have much details about this, only that the ATSB is going to investigate this incident. I thought Bill's comment, though, was kind of a good one. He said in his email that this is what keeps the FAA moving slowly. Events like this highlight the need for a set of rules that allow all the aircraft to coexist while reducing the risks of collision. And I think that's a fair statement.
Agreed. And we, of course, needed to get FAA in the podcast anyway, no matter what. But Australia has moved a lot quicker for integration. And clearly, two incidents where they were flying in the same airspace. The article that Bill provided is very newsworthy and...
it's very brief.
It's very brief and very salacious is the word I was looking for. We don't really know the details, so maybe we need to follow up more on it. But because the other part about it is, as drone crashes mount, the implication there is there's a lot of drones falling from the skies, and we haven't seen really evidence of that yet.
No, but both of these are, as we've kind of characterized them, apparently near misses. And this is the kind of thing that I think we all dread, is that if there is a serious accident where an airplane is taken down or there's some injuries or even loss of life, this is going to represent a big problem and a big roadblock towards, you know, moving ahead with integrating UAVs into the airspace, into the commercial airspace. So, yeah, I agree with Bill that, you know, this is exactly why the FAA is moving as slowly as it is, because if there is an accident of this sort, the fingers are going to point at the FAA.
And, you know, to continue this conversation, you need a social media network.
Mm.
And we've got one. A new social network for the multi-rotor community in beta test phase. DroneUp.com is a new social media network for multicopters. Sounds like a good place to start and a good place to start having a conversation, huh, Max?
Yes, this is kind of like a little mini Facebook, if you will. There are forums. You can contribute posts. You can upload your photos and videos. It has information about UAV groups, and there's a section for pilot reviews. All of this is available to, you know, folks, enthusiasts, and, you know, those in the industry. And, of course, it's free to join, as you might expect. Now, this is brand new. And just getting started, I signed up, so I'm a member, and the first thing you might notice is that there's not a lot of activity there yet, just a few posts here and there and some things. I'm sure content will build as the word gets out. We contacted the folks at DroneUp to learn more background about how this came about and what their objectives were. And we heard back from Jake Memory. He tells us that he and a friend of his, James Lee, have created this. They both work in the aerospace industry and they fly multi-rotors. They also run a small aerial photography business on the side, which is about a year old now. But Jake mentioned that they love to upload videos to YouTube and also watch other people's videos of their weekend FPV adventures. But there didn't really seem to be a place, sort of a hub, that was geared specifically to the multi-rotor community where they could share stuff. So they've put this together and offered it up, and they were a little surprised, I guess, at how quickly it's been catching on and how many people seem to be interested in it.
Well, you being a multi-rotor pilot, you should be getting all sorts of experience and questions done. I guess I need to start joining the bandwagon shortly. Jake says, quote, "Sure, there are forums where people share information. There's YouTube. There are groups on Facebook where people interact. But until now, there's been no specific site where like-minded people interested in this exciting technology can come together in a way that only Facebook users know. We now share content, video, pictures, pinpoint locations on a map where they fly, link pictures to that location, and lots more, all in a structured and managed way." They got a really good head start, and I think we want to throw our little bit, what little weight we have behind them, and wish them the best, and hopefully we'll have a great community and we can be part of that community.
Absolutely. So yeah, definitely invite you all to take a look at that. It's at dronedup.com. Just simply that. And they're still developing it, working hard. They're interested in suggestions. I think that they are, you know, eager to get input and feedback. So, you know, contribute your thoughts to those guys.
All right. So I guess we should move on to the dead.
The dead. Yes. UAS mapping of cemeteries in the Czech Republic. So that's kind of an interesting headline to take a look at. So the Czech Unmanned Aerial Systems Company, UpVision, has been working with Brno City Hall using a hexacopter and also a fixed-wing UAV to capture images of cemeteries. Now, why would they want to do that? Well, they're putting all this data into a GIS system that allows them to manage and administer city cemeteries.
And it's a very efficient way to find the next place people are dying to get into, I guess. You're looking for the empty. One of my old mother's old-time favorite sayings is cemeteries. People are just dying to get in there.
That's right. That's right.
But you find the where the places that are open, and it's a great way to monitor whether the cemetery needs to be cleaned up. So they have five machines and are certified by the Czech CAA, which is their equivalent of the Federal Aviation Administration.
Right. And as we mentioned, they're using both copters and fixed wing, rotary craft and fixed wing. They use the hexacopter for smaller cemeteries, and that kind of a mission typically takes around 10 minutes. But they have some larger cemeteries that they're trying to survey, like the Central Brno Cemetery. That has over 80,000 graves. So they use a fixed-wing UAV to map those. This company,
that's a big cemetery.
That is a very big cemetery. This company, UpVision, is interesting. They provide a wide variety of services, including photogrammetry, GIS photography, and consulting. And I think they're a sort of a big operator of UAVs in Czechoslovakia. So interesting application, you know, yet again. I mean, here's something you might think of as being sort of similar to, you know, kind of crop surveys, agricultural surveys, and that kind of thing. But here they need to map and catalog and manage these large old cemeteries. And this is a great way to do it.
So how do you get into a cemetery? Booze.
Or too much anyway.
Or too much. Beer today, gone tomorrow. Regulator bans booze on drones. This was from Wired. This is one of their favorite topic is alcohol delivery by drones.
Right.
And Lake Maid Beer were flying out the cases of beer to those lonely ice fishermen who Max and I still haven't quite figured out why they would want to be out there fishing in the cold. But unfortunately, you're not going to be able to get your Guinness either by drone.
That's right. The article points out that in the UK, UAVs are regulated by the CAA, the Civil Aviation Authority. And under Articles 166 and 167 of the Air Navigation Order 2009, SUAS must obtain permission from the CAA before a flight if that flight is for aerial work purposes. Carrying beers for delivery, I guess, would be in that category. Or if it's within a congested area or in proximity to people or property. Or
London.
London, right. Or for any form of surveillance or data acquisition. So it's kind of similar in the UK to what we have in the US with the FAA. So no beer deliveries, no commercial beer deliveries in the US, same in the UK.
If you think about it, though, if you fly the beer and you start a party, then you can videotape it from the drone to see all of the wildness that occurs from the beer that was delivered, all of which is illegal according to those rules. But we digress, because North Carolina lawmakers are creating a board to govern drone use.
That's right. This North Carolina Office of the Chief Information Officer has recommended that a UAS governance board be created to develop UAS policy and create standards for their use and operation. And they also want to use the board to approve or deny requests for drone use. This is North Carolina.
And this is expensive. We talk about the FAA bureaucracy. Here we are, a single state creating their own bureaucracy. The board is going to cost $780,000 per year. Now, what do we get for $780,000? Well, for one, a job I'd like, an executive director and data analyst at a $215,000 a year, $130,000 for data storage and management, and $435,000 to operate and maintain the unmanned aircraft. Now, the implication there is they're going to buy their own aircraft as well as moderate everybody else's.
Yes, it really does suggest that they're talking about here aircraft for state government
police,
services,
fire.
Police, right, all of those kinds of things. And that $780,000 per year, that's the recurring cost. They also estimate that if they go forward with this, and I guess the state legislature has to vote on it and create this board. But there's also estimated to be an $850,000 initial setup cost for this program, which would include purchasing the UAVs and related equipment and so forth.
And inevitably, it'll have 13 members on this board. The Office of the Chief Information Officer would provide someone. The DOT or the Department of Transportation would provide someone. Environment and Natural Resources, Department of Public Safety, and the Next Gen Air Transportation Center at NC State University, which is also conducting UAS tests in the state. And, of course, we need the political the political assignments, members appointed by the governor and General Assembly. Dear Governor of North Carolina, I'm not sure who that is currently, but if you need someone to move there to become part of this and you'll pay me the $215,000, I'll be happy to volunteer.
Very good. Sounds like a nice job, the right kind of job for you, David.
Yeah, I know. I'd volunteer you, but you're already retired, so it doesn't get any better than that.
Well, that's true. So one of the issues here is, you know, the state creating a board, an entity to
monitor and operate UAVs.
Yes, which it'd be interesting to see if other states follow with the same kind of strategy or take a different approach.
And then, of course, who has the final say? Is it the state or the FAA? There's the FAA says they own the universe from a millimeter off the ground to ad infinitum. And here you have a state saying, well, okay, you might have that authority, but you don't have that authority in North Carolina. So we start getting into a federal versus states' rights argument, and I'm not sure I'm that much of a constitutional scholar to be able to handle that argument.
It does seem very complicated, potentially. And we are seeing activity in a number of states in the U.S. to create some kind of local or state-specific regulation or authority. And so this issue is bigger than just here in North Carolina, but the other states have kind of this issue as well. So we'll be watching that and see how that shakes out. I'm sure that will be an interesting story to follow.
Yeah, nature abhors a vacuum and bureaucracies abhor a vacuum, and the FAA right now doesn't really have any rules. So we have other people stepping in to make them. So we'll see.
Right. All right, David. Well, we have a really interesting video of the week.
Yeah, it's hot. One of our listeners, Todd, sent it to us. Of course, it's a DJI Phantom, but it flies into a volcano.
An active volcano, too. This is really impressive. I mean, I think we've all probably seen videos taken in and around volcanoes, maybe, or showing us, you know, lava flowing as a result of an eruption. But I don't think we've ever seen anything quite like the view that this Phantom provides with its little GoPro hanging over the actual volcano. I mean, you get right in close, personal. Stuff is exploding all around it. I'm surprised the Phantom didn't get taken out by some of that ejecting material coming out of the volcano,
or just melt.
Yes.
It is good to DJI. I mean, they evidently make a quality product that can survive the harshest. Next thing you know, they'll be flying it down in Antarctica. We show the multiple extremes, but definitely take a look at it. Get yourself some water because you'll start sweating. But definitely, and thanks to Todd for sending it to us.
Yeah, it's a great video. I really like this one.
So let's talk about feedback. And of course, we're getting lots of it. You guys are very active and we appreciate everything. And just remember, it's feedback@theuavdigest.com. So let's take it away.
All right, we heard from Peter. And he sent us a couple of messages, I guess, but he's been looking around at the Team Black Sheep site and poking around YouTube, and he sends us a link to something at rcmodelreviews.com. He says there's a lot of good stuff related to radio control. Also, he's quite outspoken on a number of issues. He found that pretty interesting.
And, of course, we can't not talk about Trappi versus the FAA, which he sent an opinion piece based on it. And talking about Team Black Sheep are really good at flying UAVs and drones, but makes you wonder if they're a little too, what's the word I'm looking for?
Aggressive?
Aggressive in their techniques, that, you know, sometimes you shouldn't really poke the bull or wave a red flag in front of it, because eventually you will get it to charge. And he thinks that a lot of Black Sheep, what they do is they want to poke the bull and get the FAA and challenge them on things that they disagree with.
And that at least seems to be the result of some of the things that they do. He sent along a link to this video. This is Trappi versus the FAA, an opinion piece rant, which I think we've had in the show notes before. I think we've mentioned this before. But I think that there's an apropos statement made in that, which he says, to paraphrase, regarding Team Black Sheep, you either love them or hate them or both. So I think that's a good quote.
And I like his quote, which is, keep up the great work. I'm on the edge of my chair waiting for the next episode.
Absolutely.
Well, we don't recommend that, but we do appreciate the sentiment.
Yeah.
And the next one we got was from Mark Bailey. He actually sent it to our sister show, Airplane Geeks. Hi, geeks. Thought you'd find this of interest. I live pretty close to Gatwick Airport, which is outside of London. Police are using drones these days is nothing new, but flying them around the airport, well, that does sound interesting. And yes, true, the police are trying to fly drones around Gatwick's airspace. Kind of unique, huh?
Absolutely. The Sussex police, they're testing an Iron Sky Ranger quadcopter for 3 months, and they're going to use that to monitor incidents in and around Gatwick Airport. And it's an interesting little quadcopter. It's got a high-resolution camera that's stabilized. And supposedly, at least according to the webpage, the Sky Ranger description, that it can fly for up to 50 minutes with a payload.
You know, Max, one of the things that I think about, and we're talking about sharing airspace, I wonder how much the police have with the air traffic controls around Gatwick. Do they report in? The interaction would be really interesting between the police and air traffic control, so we don't have something like a A318 ingesting a quadcopter.
Yes, because that would be pretty ugly. But yeah, you're right. There must be some protocol for them to coordinate. There must be some ground rules, some procedures to define, you know, where these Sky Rangers will be flown and how they'll be flown. And obviously, I think some kind of method for communication so that they don't get into a situation like the first story we talked about with the UAV and the manned aircraft unable to communicate with each other and develop into a difficult situation. So, yeah, I'm sure, I would like to hope that they've got that kind of thought through. I just don't know what that is.
And we can always go back to one of our first uses for quadcopters. We could be chasing birds around the airport with the quad hopper. So that would be kind of cool if they can get this to work. And we'll have to, if anybody in the Sussex area knows anything else, maybe some local news stories, because we do have quite a few Great Britain listeners, definitely let us know, because I'd love to know how this is proceeding and who gets the right of way, and do they have... I'd like to know the more details about that.
Yeah. All right, so that's great. I'm really enjoying the feedback we're getting from listeners, David. We're getting a lot of good response, and we really appreciate that. Keep that coming in, folks. Of course, as David mentioned, that's feedback@theuavdigest.com. That's our email address.
And you can visit us on the website, which is theuavdigest.com, and you can always leave a comment there. You can follow us on Twitter at UAV Digest. And don't forget our Facebook page, where as of this week, Max, I think we have 100 people on our Facebook page, which is pretty, we're getting growing there, but we could grow quicker. So go to our UAV Digest page. And of course, if you really love us, go to iTunes and leave a recommendation. We've got really good feedback there, but it helps to spread the word that we are the best show. And of course, if you really want some stuff, we have a Cafe Press site, which is cafepress.com/theuavdigest.
Oh, outstanding. All right. So you've been listening to episode 33 of the UAV Digest. Find show notes at theuavdigest.com. Or you can use the shortcut, theuavdigest.com/33 for episode 33. And we'd also like to thank Go Engineer for sponsoring this episode. Learn more about them at theuavdigest.com/goengineer. So this has been Max in Hartford.
And David in Philly.
Thanks for listening.
See you next week.